Chapter 6 Prisoners. Following the raid on St. Sidran's, the citizens of Abersford wished that everyday life could be as before. After Moreland City, no such dream was possible, not after eyewitness accounts circulated. Everyone knew nothing would ever be the same, though they didn't know what the future would be. For Yosef, his work focused on a stronger commitment to finding ways to defend against the Narthani. The swivel carriages had played a critical role in the clan's success at Moreland City, but could not provide a long-term solution to the islanders' lack of artillery. Neither could the captured Narthani 12-pounders. Although those were useful, the clans needed 10 times as many or more. The solution to the problem with casting larger cannon barrels came from an unexpected source, and the solution itself was simple, to Yosef's considerable consternation. A month after the battle, 2 wagons with guards arrived in Abersford. Their cargo? Narthani and Iwalese prisoners captured at Moreland City and kept alive for questioning as ordered by Dennis Vega at Yosef's urging. The prisoners were questioned at Moreland City and then transferred to Kernford because keeping them alive had been Keelan's idea. No one in Kernford knew what to do with Narthani and Iwalese prisoners. After cursory questioning, Vordig Lewis, one of Hetman Keelan's chief advisors and in charge of the prisoners, decided they needed to be disposed of and sent them on to Abersford for Dennis and Yosef to determine whether more questioning might prove worthwhile. Yosef was in the foundry when a disgruntled Dennis found him.
"They've sent us 2 wagons of Narthani and Iwalese prisoners, either to question or get rid of. Why couldn't Lewis handle this in Kernford?"
"Prisoners?" said Yosef, surprised. "I'd heard we had a few at Moreland City, but I'd assumed they'd been dealt with by now."
Dennis slapped his riding gloves against his pant leg in frustration.
"The guards who brought them want to head back to Kernford right away, but I told them they'd have to keep guarding the prisoners until you and I decide what to do with them. However, it'll have to be tomorrow. Since the rest of today, I'm taking one of our thirds north of Abersford to practice riding to a battle site and deploying. We've expanded the numbers again, and there are 20 men who have either no experience in being part of a battle or practice in being a dragoon."
"All right," Yosef said. "We can look at them tomorrow morning."
Dennis nodded.
"I've already appropriated the cellar of the empty warehouse Filton Fuller says you're planning to convert into a workshop. We'll keep them chained there overnight. The guards will complain it's not their responsibility, but the hell with them."
Yosef met Dennis the next morning outside the warehouse. A sour-looking, rangy-built man stood next to the entrance, his arms folded tightly on his chest, glaring at the cause of his delay in leaving.
"All right. You're here, and we guarded the prisoners last night. Now can we formally turn them over to you and be out of here?"
"I'm the magistrate in this area, and you'll be released when I say," snarled Dennis.
The guard spat to one side, said nothing, and followed them inside and down a rickety wooden stairway to a dank basement. Dennis lit a lantern, casting a yellowish glow over the scene. Men lying chained together covered the floor. The few clothes they wore didn't hide bruises, with some fresh enough to have occurred the previous day. All appeared borderline emaciated, as if they had been fed barely enough to keep them alive. A few turned heads to look listlessly at their visitors. Most didn't move at all. From their condition, Yosef assumed they had been beaten regularly, perhaps every day. If no new information had been produced for 6 days, then the beating served only to appease the urge for vengeance.
The casualties at St. Sidran's and the carnage at Moreland City had scrubbed out more of the delicate sensitivities Yosef had brought to Anyar, but he wanted results. His only remaining qualms were against gratuitous violence. He would have been less concerned if the Cadeli had taken no prisoners or had executed them after a useful interrogation. Yosef wanted a race back up the stairs and clear his head from the stench. Instead, he breathed as shallowly as he could and fought to keep his stomach from retching.
Dennis, I don't think questioning them while they're in this condition will get us anything. Let's clean them up, feed them, and try again tomorrow. Also, move them out of this place and up into the warehouse and take the chains off. They look like they can hardly walk, so I think armed guards aren't going to have trouble with them.
Dennis appeared dubious, but the guard was outraged.
You're going to what?
They're all ignorant scum of Narthania, and we're wasting time. We should have killed them on the way here and been done with it.
Are you sure about this, Yosef? Said Dennis. The man has a point. Shouldn't we just cut their throats and be done with them?
Yosef counted Dennis as a friend, or close to it. But he didn't have any illusions about Dennis's ruthlessness, brought to the surface by a perceived threat to the island, his clan, his family, or anyone under his responsibility.
It may be that they have no information of use to us, he replied, but I could try some of the techniques my people have found effective, if you would allow me to take over the questioning.
No point in telling Cadeli their interrogation manner leaves something to be desired, nor is it likely to produce the best results. I wonder if whoever questioned them even did it systematically or went straight to beatings.
I think you'll waste your time, but go ahead. I have more urgent matters to attend to. Let me know when you give up, then I'll have them buried,
said a skeptical Dennis, leaving Yosef wondering whether Dennis would have them killed prior to their internment. Before leaving, Dennis gave firm instructions to the guard leader to follow Yosef's orders, no matter how much he disagreed, with the promise that the guards would be released to leave in 2 more days. Thus, Dennis left Yosef, left in charge of 17 Narthani and 8 Iwalis, all well tenderized.
Well, they've certainly had the bad cop treatment, so I might as well take advantage by becoming the good cop.
Wait here, Yosef told the guard leader. I'll be back in a few minutes. He escaped back up the stairs and out of the warehouse into the open air. Several lungfuls of air settled his stomach, and he hustled next door to the distillation facility.
Felten!
He called out over the talking workers and the clang of metal and glass.
I need help! Can you and the other men stop what you're doing and come with me?
The 5 men gathered around him.
They've sent Narthanian Iwali's prisoners here for us to question. Now, I know what all your views are as to what should be done with such men, but I believe we might get useful information from them that might help against the Narthani.
The men murmured uneasily, and one turned red-faced and opened his mouth to speak before Felten cut him off.
Don't say it, Biwan. If Yosef says this may be important, then we all should know by now to listen to him.
Felten turned back to Yosef.
I suppose you call us together because you want us to do something about these prisoners.
Yes. The men are in too bad a condition to question them right away.
I need you to help get them ready to question. Felten, I'll leave details to you, but I want medicines here as soon as possible to treat them. Also, get them some clean clothes, water, and hot food. While you're getting that organized, I'll go over to the foundry and fetch Yawnfall to translate into Narthani.
He's not going to be happy, said Felten.
He's a pretty, and he witnessed what happened to his clan and most of his family.
Plus, although I believe he knows some Narthani, I don't know if it's enough to trust him as a translator.
I know, said Yosef, but he'll have to do for the moment.
I'll impress on him I'm trying to get information from the prisoners. We can never be sure when even the smallest piece of information could be important.
What? Screamed the guard when Filton showed up at the warehouse with several women carrying baskets of food and buckets of water. For these animals! They're not getting any treatment except for the knife, and I'm certainly not feeding them!
The other guards growled in agreement. Yosef knew his stock had risen since the battle. It was time to see whether it meant something in situations like this. He stepped to within inches of the guard's face. He kept his voice as deadpan as he could, trying not to reveal he was primed to run for it if necessary. From the guard's build and scars, Yosef knew the man could turn him into mincemeat in short order.
You will do as I say.
At first, the man just stared as he processed Yosef's words. Then, when he started to turn red and prepare to do God knows what to Yosef, two other guards pulled him aside. One merely looked nervous while the other was pale. They whispered together for almost a minute. By the time the lead guard turned back to Yosef, his visible ire had vanished, replaced by a wary look.
As you wish, Sir Kulsku, he ground out. We'll guard them. But you'll have to find others to tend to the scum.
With a slight but definite and insolent bow, he and the others hustled out. Yosef exhaled. A fourth guard had observed all that transpired and remained with an amused look.
Who are you?
Asked Yosef in a cold voice.
My name is Balwis Preddy.
Preddy? As in Clan Preddy?
As in the Preddy.
So are you from the Hetman's family?
Not hardly, said the man. But it's the name I choose to go by.
Whatever, thought Yosef, who learned in the next few minutes that Balwis was an escaped Preddy who had fled to Moorland and been working on a ranch for the last year. He numbered among the survivors of the Moorland Hetman's disastrous attack on the Narthani Center. Being fluent in Narthani, which he'd learned during the 2 years before his escape, he had been called on as an interpreter for prisoner questioning. From the condition of the man's knuckles, Yosef suspected he had been among the men administering beatings to the prisoners. Balwis looked calmly at Yosef, who got annoyed.
No comments? Yosef asked.
No, said Balwis, with an expression that had elements of humor. I'm just curious how you expect to get more information out of the Narthani.
Yosef laughed.
Wondering if I'm crazy or something for wanting to feed the prisoners and treat their injuries?
From what I hear, one would be wise to listen carefully to any ideas coming from Yosef Kolsko, even if they seem crazy.
Yosef laughed again, relaxing. I think I might like this guy.
Our goal is to get information, however possible,
Yosef explained.
Trying it your way sometimes works if time is short, but the experience of my people is that if time is not a factor, there are other ways.
Based on their previous treatment, I think the prisoners expect only the worst, so why should they cooperate?
What I intend doing is to convince them that I mean them no harm and will protect them from people like you and the guards, though only if they cooperate with me.
And this works? Asked Balwis skeptically.
Sometimes yes and sometimes no. At this point, with these prisoners, it's a matter of what's to lose.
Balwas nodded in understanding, if not belief.
I'm going to need your help, said Yosef. Since I don't speak Narthani, you'll have to continue interpreting.
I'll send back the worker who I sent for to translate and let you do it.
It's important that you understand what we'll be trying to do and get the meanings accurately across to the Narthani. Since they already have experience with you, you'll be the bad man who disapproves of my new methods and has to obey and do translating at my order. Call it the good man, bad man method of questioning.
Malwis nodded understanding with a bemused expression.
What if they don't cooperate?
Then we're no worse off, but I think at least some of them will. Of course, we can also mix up the method. Since you're the bad man, we can always include some of the previous methods, but only if I order it. We want them to think I'm sympathetic to them and the only positive part of their existence.
This should be interesting,
said a now fully amused Balwas.
Either I will learn some of the tricks of the great Yosef Kolsko, or I'll have incredible stories to tell at pubs for the rest of my life.
Yosef smiled. It's a winning situation for you, no matter what happens. I have other matters I need to attend to, so I'll leave you in charge here to see that the Narthani are treated, fed, and given some blankets to keep warm tonight. One of my workers will return with medicaments. See that he gets whatever assistance he needs. We'll start questioning tomorrow.
Yosef arrived at the warehouse at mid-morning the next day. Balwas Preti sat against the outside wall and rose when he saw Yosef.
As you ordered, our Narthani friends are waiting for you,
Balwas said sardonically.
Let's see them, replied Yosef,
entering the building and expecting to see the prisoners lying on the floor. Instead, to his surprise, men in plain but clean clothes sat or slept on rows of cots.
What the?
Since we're being nice to them now, didn't seem right to leave them on the floor, so your man Fuller found enough cots.
The guard leader was huddled with the other guards and strode quickly to the entrance when he saw Yosef.
I hope everything is to your satisfaction, Sir Kolsko,
gushed the almost obsequious man.
All the prisoners were given clothes, soap, and water to wash and fed as much as they could eat last night and this morning.
Yosef eyed the man and wondered about the change in demeanor.
Yes, everything seems in good shape. Thank you for your effort.
With that, the guard half bowed and hurried back to his companions.
What's gotten into him?
Yosef mumbled into the air.
We've gotten an earful from several of the locals on exactly who Yosef Kolsko is.
My companions got somewhat vocal last night at a pub, and one particular fellow took exception to some of the comments about your parentage.
The pub wouldn't happen to be the snarling Greco, would it? And the particular fellow, large and red-haired?
Right. Both times, said Balwas.
You can sure grow them big around here.
I thought Grawin was going to shit his pants when he got picked up by the front of his shirt.
Grawin? Our brave guard leader.
Yosef envisioned the scene and felt grateful. Carnegie had only warned the idiot. It was time to begin with the prisoners. He addressed the guards.
We'll use one of the warehouse front rooms. You'll see some odd pieces of furniture scattered around the warehouse. Set up a table with two chairs. We'll work with the prisoners one at a time and see which ones are willing to talk and if they have anything to say of interest.
Balwas, you'll stay behind me and a step back. The reason you'll stand is not because I don't want you to sit down, but so we make the prisoners see me as more of an authority figure they might want to please and you as the subordinate. Some of them might be more likely to talk with the threat of you visible if I'm not pleased. Translate everything as accurately as you can.
Oh, I'll translate for you.
I just don't see this working. Maybe not.
One by one, the guards brought in the prisoners. Still bruised, wary, and fearful, they looked better than the previous day. Yosef had writing materials and started off with name, rank, age, origin, and a few other items of information. More than half of the men were too incoherent, too defiant, too frightened, or too ill-informed to give much in the way of answers. Yet he could mind the rest of them. Those men were open books. Either eager to curry better treatment and protection from Yosef, or relieved to no longer be under Nathani authority. After midday meal, Yosef and Balwis, this time both sitting, brought back the men individually and started in-depth questioning. Although much of the information was redundant, by that evening they had the names and ranks of the Nathani command structure down to at least some of the lower command levels, depending on the experience of the prisoner, consistent estimates of the numbers of Nathani troops of each type, numbers of cannon, a rough outline of the conditions in Preti province, and knowledge of the almost complete supplanting of the original islanders in Preti province. Most immediately interesting, Yosef got an estimate of how many Nathani military and civilians resided on Kedalium. 10,000 to 12,000 of the former, and 70,000 to 110,000 of the latter. That evening, he summarized the first interrogations and sent a copy to College Keelan in Cairnford. The Iwell prisoners provided details that complemented those from previous prisoners' interrogations. They had knowledge of conditions within Iwell province, but little if any information about the Nathani or Preti province. Unfortunately, even their familiarity with their own province was scanty, because they originated from a sparsely populated part of Iwell. One of the men felt so relieved when Yosef said they wouldn't be killed if they cooperated that he broke down crying. When he recovered, he relayed to Yosef that most Iwell captives had been killed outright even more eagerly than were the Nathani. Yosef decided that had to change. He needed information on conditions within Iwell and Selfsel. By the time they quit for the evening, Balwis was a convert.
I admit I thought you were pretty stupid to think playing your good man to the Nathani would get us anything. I was wrong. We can always kill them later. Now I see how cleverly you got them to give us information, even if I'm not sure how much of it will be useful.
Do we have to kill them in the end? Asked Yosef.
What else would we do with them?
Questioned Bull was confused.
They're Nathani.
He uttered the last words with deep bitterness and ignored the Iwellese. What about the last Nathani we questioned today? Asked Yosef. He can't be more than 17 years old. From what he tells us, he lived with his family working at the estate of a Nathani lord of some kind back in Narthon. Almost slaves themselves. At age 15, he was sent to a troop training camp where for the next 6 months, senior troops brutalized him into becoming a disciplined soldier who would obey any orders given. What choice did he have? If he had refused, he thinks he would have been executed and his family punished for not raising him to be a proper Nathani. Balwis remained quiet, conflicting thoughts vying in his mind.
I don't know, he said finally,
remembering how the youth had cried when Yosef suggested he might be allowed not only to live, but not to be sent back to the Nathani.
Everything they say about you is true, said Balwis thoughtfully.
Everything they say? Like what?
That you do things and know things like no one else has ever seen. And that everywhere you go, things change. Most think for the better, even if many are uneasy at the speed of change. Something tells me we have only seen the beginning, and that you're probably important for us against the Nathani.
Balwa stomped back and forth in the room, mumbling to himself as if arguing or trying to make a decision. Yosef waited. Finally, he said,
"Yes. I want to kill every living Nathani. Yet as much as I want that, I know driving them off Cadellium is more important. You will need more interpreting. Not just with these prisoners, but more times in the future. You'll need someone you can trust to translate. I'll be your regular interpreter. I can also do whatever more unpleasant tasks are needed that you cannot or will not do. There. That decides it.
I'm now in your service.
Do I have any say in this decision?"
countered an amused Yosef.
"No."
Thus did Balwas Preti become an aide to Yosef. As useful as the background information was on the first day of conducting in-depth interrogations, on the second day they hit pay dirt. The next to last of the Narthani prisoners was a scruffy older man with weathered skin and graying hair. He had been the crew leader of one of the 12-pounder cannon captured during the battle and was a 20-year veteran in the Narthani army. Despite those years of service, the older man felt no loyalty to the Narthan Empire. It simply existed, and he could do nothing about it. So he did what was necessary to survive. While he never clarified exactly where he came from, he transferred whatever loyalty he had to Yosef as the most expedient action at the moment. Yosef had no illusions that his allegiance wouldn't transfer back to Narthan with changing circumstances, yet that was irrelevant. What was relevant was that the man had served the last 12 years as an artilleryman and had collected tidbits of knowledge along the way, such as how to cast cannon whose barrels didn't inconveniently tend to burst when fired. Bingo. Yosef's elation at possibly solving the cannon foundry problem was quickly replaced by embarrassed chagrin after hearing the old Narthani's advice translated by Balwas.
"I'm surprised all the barrels didn't burst with no reinforcing bands," was all he had to say for Yosef to recognize one obvious and trivial solution.
Not only the thickness of the breeches presented a problem, but Yosef could improve the general strength along the tube's length by adding reinforcing metal bands at several sites along the barrel. The Narthani didn't need to use such bands because they had cast the original barrels with even cooling of the metal after pouring. Yosef's foundry workers had poured the barrels as a solid cast, with a clay mold holding the position of the bore. After cooling, they had bored out the clay and smoothed the inside of the barrel. As the metal cooled from the outside inward, the solid outer layers pulled away from the still molten interior, creating small cavities. These created weak spots in the finished barrels. With the smaller swivel guns, the cooling proceeded fast enough to minimize imperfections, but not so with the larger bores. The solution was to use a hollow casting core in the center of the mold. They would pump water in and out of the core while keeping the exterior hot, thus cooling from the inside out and pulling molten metal toward the interior instead of the reverse. After hearing the old man, Yosef sat quietly as his memory dredged up references to these exact suggestions. It wasn't that his memory didn't have the information. He simply hadn't asked himself the right questions to bring it forward. It was a chastising lesson for him. Even with enhanced memory, he had to conduct proper searches, as with the internet back on Earth. Everything was there, but he just had to implement a specific search to find specific answers. Even so, he didn't understand how he had missed the information. "I know I can excuse myself by saying I simply have too much to do,
but I just can't make these kinds of mistakes too often.
They finished with the last prisoner on the evening of the second day. Yosef was surprised that Balwis or the guards didn't object when he ordered the prisoners who had cooperated to be transferred to another building with actual beds, bedding, and better food. The old Narthani artilleryman, Razil Gurbus, would work at the foundry where Yonfol would translate and Balwis would check regularly. With the ideas about reinforcing bands and the different method of cooling the cast barrels, Yosef felt certain they could successfully cast larger cannon. Cooperative Narthani prisoners found jobs in trades or shops, also under close observation. The young Narthani whom Yosef had used to ask Balwis what he would have done in the boy's situation was sent to work on a ranch in eastern Keelan, along with the Iwalese prisoners. He tried to think of a future for the other Narthani prisoners. When he failed, they disappeared the morning after he informed Dennis.